Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. And with us, we have a fellow doc who lifts. Dr. Angela Fitch. She is the president of the Obesity Medicine Association. It's been a friend of ours for now quite some time.
Long time.
We've been going to it before it was called the OMA.
Since you were a student I was a resident.
I was just a little med student back then.
I didn't know what the hell was going on.
No, I still don't. But she
But I do.
Yeah, but you do. That's why you're on our podcast.
Yeah.
Angela is, we love Angela. She's also the chief medical officer of her new company, KnownWell. And I'm going to have her discuss why she created this. Are you a co-founder as well?
Yes, co-founder. Yep, co-founder, okay. Chief medical officer, seeing patients, doctor.
Amazing. Yeah. And we're also going to go over, she was just ran the OMA, the Obesity Medicine Association, spring conference, and we're going to get some highlights from there. And we can also talk about the brand new Surmount 2 trial that just came out. And there's some confusion around there because people don't realize that it was done with those with type 2 diabetes as opposed to the Surmount 1, which was without. So anyway, we will get in that. So welcome, Angela. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a privilege. I feel like I've reached my pinnacle of my career because I've made it on the dock. I can now retire.
So we heard that you had mentioned our podcast at the Obesity Medical Association.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
850 attending people at the OMA, you know, our annual conference there, our spring conference. And I was like, I was a big fan because I was talking about how we were talking about body composition and the importance of body composition. That was one of the themes I think that came out of the conference was sort of the idea around personalization of care and the idea that we need to pay attention to body composition, especially even more so, not that we haven't for a long time, but especially as we get into more highly effective anti-obesity treatments.
Yeah. Were you at my little debate? You were there, weren't you? Or no, did you have to leave before my debate at the Obesity Week?
I had to leave before your debate.
That was right. But you had to leave because I gave you the Docs Who Lift shirt.
Yeah.
Yes, I did get a free shirt. So in full disclosure of the the podcast appearance today, I took a free shirt.
That's true. I was debating because these medicines are so powerful, the focus should be on resistance training. So very cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like that's a big focus at your conference too.
It was.
Tell us about your history of lifting weights since you're a doc who lifts and you were just talking about some achievements you've scored and proud of your strength.
I know I was doing, you know, we just got our new, in my new clinic, my new company, KnownWell, we are a comprehensive care center for people with obesity, delivering both primary care and obesity treatment and metabolic health treatment, you know, to people with obesity and overweight. And we have a new Sika scale in our office, which I love the new Sika scale. And so I got to get on that and I was like impressed myself with my own accomplishments. And I was like, wow, that's so exciting. Cause you know, the number doesn't change on the scale a lot. And I get frustrated by that myself, even as an obesity medicine specialist. And I keep thinking, oh, you know, it's not moving. Right. And, and it gets you a little down, but then you see these numbers and you're just like, wow, that's why I do it. I've been lifting. So I've had obesity myself. I struggled with obesity as I got older. I have a family history of obesity. My whole family struggles. My brother is very heavy. He has severe obesity and he had that even as a child. And I did not know that. I mean, at the time I recognized he was getting, you know, teased at times and things like when we were little, but you know, I obviously wasn't an obesity medicine physician, but
yeah. But it registered with you. I mean, you knew something.
And he really has struggled, and I unfortunately, you know, didn't have issues till after I had kids and residency.
It's always those kids. kids. I'm serious.
I know.
I survey everybody, and you know, we have thousands of people. I mean, just kids. Uh-huh. That's the number uh-huh. one answer. So. Yeah.
So I had a baby, and I, you know, went through residency. Right, that was a lot of. I think you know, no sleep, stress. Mm. Right,
yeah.
Back in our days, and anyway, I started to gain weight, and I had, you know, issues with my weight, and started to get hypertension, and started to get sleep apnea. And I said to myself, and you know, I have a family history of diabetes, heart disease. That's kind of my, you know, metabolic syndrome is my side of the. Is my family, you know, curse there, genetically. And I was like, you know, I need to take my own like medicine, you know, the things that I help patients do every day. And I decided to take a hold of that. And I started lifting as well as taking medication, for weight management. Cause I was riding my Peloton. I was doing all this stuff. I was, you know, following my various different meal plans, and I just would get maybe 5% weight loss. And then, it would get stuck, right? And
You know, so, that's a great example. You know, we talk about that all the time, because especially on social media, as I'm sure you see, especially with us, you know, whenever we share exciting results about some of these great new obesity medications, it always ends up bringing out people going, whoa, no, you guys don't do anything about diet and exercise and all this other stuff.
Right.
And most of the time, and now we, you know, collectively certainly are specialists, and the frontline primary care is somewhat different. There needs to be more lifestyle education on the front lines, I think, across the board from the beginning, family focused, all that stuff to address those issues. But people have always tried these things. That's the thing. It's not like people are coming to us after not trying some way. We're going to continue to help personalize their nutrition and exercise and all that stuff for their health. But my God, I mean, that's a perfect example of you knew exactly what to do, and you were hammering it out. You were working hard on it, and with modest results, certainly healthy, you know, because it's more than just the weight, as we talk about all the time. But then with the assistance of pharmacotherapy, you really responded well and even better.
Yes. And then I have these numbers down. Now I'm working on a little different thing, right? I'm working on more protein, because I don't actually, you know, eat enough protein for the amount of exercise that I'm doing. Yeah. And I have to give, you know, great credit to, I started working out maybe like 6 or 7 years ago at maybe even longer, probably even a little bit longer than that, lifting at Cincinnati Functional Fitness. Big shout out to them. Love them.
Nice.
And then I now am working with Nicole Cotnor on the training lab. At the training lab in Weston, Massachusetts. And, you know, she's really helping us to design our exercise component too for Knownwell. So we are going to have
When did you start lifting though?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, about 10 years ago, maybe.
10 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I mean,
so
hardcore,
I
would always do little things in the gym. Or
can we give an ad a girl? Because I have noticed over the years, body composition changes that I can tell.
She's flexing for anybody who can't see.
Yeah.
Or he's not watching.
Got to give an ad a girl, because I know you're not supposed to like comment on people, but I know that you've been putting in the effort, and I can tell the changes. So strong work putting
And most importantly, very literally, again, it's what's on the inside that counts, and you've made yourself even healthier with those efforts.
Yeah, and that's really what, you know, you do it because you want to be able to get up out of the chair when you're 85 without somebody helping you. That's what I always say.
Fantastic.
You know, like get up off the ground if you fall down, right? You know, because that's really what it's all about. But it takes a long time, right? Like I'm in the gym and I was doing 45-pound one arm dumbbell presses on my, you know, laying down, right? And Nicole, my trainer, these two young guys came in after me and they were, you know, commenting on something. And Nicole's like, yeah, you know, she's one of my strongest women, you know, in the gym. And they're like, oh yeah, really? You know, these two 18-year-old kids.
Okay.
And they're like, you know, she's like, yeah, she just did 45 pounds, you know, one arm dumbbell presses on the ground. And sure enough, during their cycle, then the one kid, he normally did 35, he grabs the 45. So I'm like, I'm inspiring
you're,
the young
you're good.
People.
Good, good, good. Show
Very
them.
Very cool.
These young punks. Anyway.
I want to know more about your new company.
Yeah.
Before we dive into the conference, but why did you start that? What was the impetus for this? You were at Harvard?
Mass General, yep. Harvard Medical School,
Harvard.
Harvard. I was at Cincinnati before that. I was in Minnesota before that. So, you know, I've really been in academic medicine my entire career, and really have, and in systems, big systems of care. So in Minnesota, I was at Fairview, big accountable care organization, one of the first accountable care organizations in the country. So really focused on quality and outcomes and everybody working to the top of their licensure and team-based care, et cetera, you know, that we were even doing back in, I did my first telemedicine visit back in like 2005. That's how innovative we were, you know, with care delivery. And so it was really sort of, you know, just always thinking about how we can advance delivery of care, right? And to advance quality of care and advance outcomes for patients, you know, at the very end, and do it all in a cost-effective manner. And that quadruple aim was something I've always been passionate about. And I've always taken that to each place I've gone to try to sort of, you know, sort of help change the system, right? Make it better for the patients that that need it, you know, and again, through insurance mechanism, right? I always felt strongly people should have insurance and then they should be able to use that insurance to access care. And for so long, you know, obesity care has been delivered in the private sector, so to speak, where people have to pay sort of extra for it. And that's because it's not well reimbursed, you know, right, in different models. So I've always been passionate about that. And during the pandemic, my co-founder, Brooke Bayersky-Pratt, she came to me as a patient with obesity, but also a very talented businesswoman. And she said, you know, I really would like to be able to find a primary care physician and an obesity medicine physician that would be aligned and help me with my one common goal, which is to, you know, achieve optimal health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is what she started looking for herself, because she would move across the country with her job and she'd have to find an obesity specialist and wait like a year, you know, to get in line. And then she'd have to try to find a primary care that was okay with her, that she didn't walk into and say, you know, I'm taking medication for obesity. And they'd say, what? You're doing what? Yeah, like, yeah. I think you should just exercise. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's classic.
Yeah. So she was trying to, you know, she would always have trouble like finding. And then also she tells this great story about how, you know, she would always launder her Harvard Business School t-shirt because she would wear it to her first appointment so that people would know she was educated and not treat her differently, because she's had obesity since she was a kid.
My God, God, talk about getting into the stigma and bias stuff that, yeah, that maybe we'll have to talk about that next week when our consensus statement that you helped me that's going to be published. I have to present it next Thursday.
Don't say too much.
I'm not going to say anything. All I'm going to say is it's coming, and they are advertising it anyway, so I can advertise it.
Damn. So you can say whatever's public now.
It's coming. Yeah. Once it's public, we'll do the. Yeah. It's God, good. So
well, but that's very important, right? And that's why we've created KnownWell, was because we've recognized that patients a lot of times don't even seek care because they feel like, even I've had patients even who've had surgery for obesity, and they'll come in and see us, you know, when I've been in the weight center and like, well, I was afraid to come back because I had gained weight back and I had failed, you know, my surgery. And I'm like, super, you didn't fail your surgery. You know, life happened. And this is what happens is
that
weight
term,
comes on. Right?
I have hated that term for a long time.
Oh, it's horrible.
So I don't know what if we have a consensus on what we should all be saying. I like to say
response,
using the word response, and didn't respond to or had whatever it is.
Yeah, like, no, but it maybe even just had weight recurrence, right?
Because that too. Yeah,
that's what happens is the human body likes to gain weight. This is like what we're you know, what we're sort of engineered to do. And we have to, especially in the world that we live in today. Yeah. And so we have to, you know, work to keep that from happening day.
That's a great point. I'll try to remember that when I talk about this next week, because that term failure, when it's used, that is a very stigmatizing thing.
So that's why we created KnownWell, because we're really passionate about also longitudinal care delivery of a chronic disease. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to do that when you have very siloed types of care, you know, and in specialty centers.
Yeah.
So we're trying to create the brand, you know, recognition of a place to come that will not be biased and stigmatizing, that will have, you know, chairs that you fit into naturally, you know, a welcoming environment that meets you where you are to accomplish your goal, which might be just to keep your weight the same. Or it might be just to, you know, lose a little bit of weight, or to improve your metabolic health, but not even focus on your weight.
Right.
And the weight just be a side, you know, side item, you know.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I'm a, you know, I'm an entrepreneurial guy in the weight loss space or obesity space too.
I'm the opposite.
I love, yeah.
My brother, I like working for free and being a martyr, like Spencer calls me.
Well, that's what I did for 25 years. God, I'm with dang. You. I'm with you. Yeah, but I got out.
Sucking wind.
Got to get out of this. But I'm actually interested in the business model. So you have one clinic open right now.
Yep.
And where is that?
In Needham, Massachusetts, which is a suburb right outside of Boston, the western suburb.
I know there are trade secrets and whatever, but like you clearly are going to have to expand this, right?
Yeah. So we're going to launch in Boston. And then, you know, we are venture capital and private equity backed and funded. And as we raise our next round of funding, that focus will be on expansion. You know, so we're essentially going to, you know, prove the model out, you know, in this innovation lab that we have going right now, which is our clinic in Needham. And then we'll expand across the country. We'll do, you know, we'll target to do, you know, at least 70% of our care via telemedicine. And then, but have this in-person option for patients so that they can, you know, come get their regular, you know, general healthcare. And they can also come and get medications that might require an in-person appointment, because some of our treatments, as you know, we want to be able to affect the whole, we want to be able to treat the whole spectrum. And until some of those laws change potentially at this point in time, people have to be able to have a place they can come into.
And as far as insurance coverage?
We're going to take insurance. And
it's a lot of it is like kind of primary care model I love it. I mean, that's, to some degree, what I'd love to do in my local system, but
you could be
very interesting.
The Michigan known
Well, Michigan.
we might have to talk about it.
That's what we're going to do, right? Is we're going to identify clinicians across the country that want to be part of something like this, and identify partnerships in local areas, whether that be a partnership with a payer partnership or an employer partnership or an insurance or a health system partnership, right? Yeah. So in healthcare, those are the different people we can kind of partner with to say, hey, we're here. And we can take all comers just from, you know, the internet, right? Or whatever. But mostly we want to work with places that are looking for providing access, especially at a population health level, to people with obesity, to make sure we work on long-term outcomes and managing cost at the same time.
Very cool. I love it.
Is it a franchise thing or is it like?
Nope. It's going to be an ownership. We're going to own the clinics, much like say One Medical or Oak Street or any of these other things that have cropped up over the time period in the past few years.
Very cool. I love the vision. Yeah. As a primary care physician myself, that was my vision. I didn't go into internal medicine and then specialize like my brother, because maybe I was naive. I don't know. You're taking it and running with it.
On the other hand, it's the same vision that I have for, again, my local community hospital system, because that's what we're going to try to build. So I don't know. We're going to definitely talk next week.
Cool.
You know, because maybe there is opportunity. Because that is exactly, I think we need to empower primary care doctors to be part of what we're doing.
Yeah. And so we're going to build, we're going to build increased access because we're going to have the infrastructure, prior authorization, all the other lifestyle factors, the exercise component, we will have, or what we're going to call movement medicine so that,
Love it. Nice. Love it.
Are you going to have a gym connected? That's what we've written our articles about, including gyms with a.
Yeah. So right now, I mean, certainly, Nicole at the training lab is going to partner with us so people could go over to her gym. She has a gym. But we're going to do some of it, as you have done before, I think, online, to have a mechanism for at least people to be able to be coached on that, to keep up with what they're doing. Because I find even myself, right? I mean, you guys are better than me. You guys just probably, by nature, get up and start working out. But
not necessarily. It's different now. With kids, my whole life is way different than it used to be. With kids, find a way, but it's different.
I used to lift 5 times a week. Now it's 3 times a week.
I used to lift it's 6 and maybe 7 days a week.
For an hour and a half now, it's like hour max now. So.
Right.
I'm like 30 minutes. Now.
I have to have that time, right? I have to make that, I have to have an appointment, on my calendar, to do it. That's just the way I am, right? It helps me to be accountable.
I think anybody listening should understand, though, that my brother's myostatin gene was turned off in utero. He had rippling pecs in utero. He doesn't have to lift. He doesn't have to lift a weight, and he'll be ripped and jacked.
Oh my God!
It's
not actually true, but
yep. Here I am.
I just happened to be lifting weights when I was 6 years old.
In utero, you had a dumbbell in utero.
Yeah, you gave Trey a dumbbell when he was
That's
one.
True.
A little bitty.
That's true.
Rattle. Yeah.
Angel, I love the vision. Yeah, I think it's great. We'll have to talk a little bit more about that. And I think with you at the helm there, you guys are going to do great.
Well, that's the hope. And the real hope is that people can feel comfortable coming somewhere. You know, we've already had people reach out to us that say things like, you know, I haven't been to the doctor in over 20 years because I was stigmatized and I'm worried I have diabetes, or I'm worried I have this X, Y, and Z. And I think, you know, just having access to people will also improve their outcomes. Yeah, access for people in a non-stigmatizing fashion will improve outcomes, even if it's not around improving their weight, so to speak, as a number goes.
Awesome. I like it. So, okay. So then you're also the president, though, of the OMA.
Yes, I'm very honored to be able to serve that role in a, you know, volunteer fashion, right, for the next year here.
That's the thing. And what is do you guys do 2-year terms or is it more than that? It seems like you guys are president for a long time, it seems like.
Well, we used to be in the past, but now we're only 1-year terms. Oh. But I get the privilege of serving for 18 months because we've changed our structure a little bit. That was one of the announcements we made at the meeting. We're going to a yearly annual meeting type of format, which many organizations have. And so our annual meeting will be in the spring. Okay. So we used to have just two sort of kind of two meetings a year, and they were just kind of like two meetings, right? Different places, and which is great too, but we're still going to have two meetings, but the one meeting is going to serve as our more annual meeting where we have a business, you know, component, and we have our election results and we turn over the office, et cetera. And that'll be in the spring. It used to be in the fall. So that's why I get to do another, you know, another year from now.
That's cool. Perfect.
April. And then we're going to still have our fall meeting, but we're going to call it our fall focused meeting. So this would be good for your listeners too, because, you know, that fall focused meeting will be a little bit shorter meeting, like a weekendy type of meeting, you know, like a Friday, Saturday,
like
half
that.
Day, Sunday.
Nice.
And then that one will be focused on something, right? So it might be like, you know, obesity and physical activity, or obesity and, you know, so maybe we'll go with, we'll reach out to American College of Sports Medicine or something and see if they want to do a combined you know, meeting or combined, you know, focused conference, and then, or ACOG or, you know,
or
other
ACE.
Type. Or ACE. Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, so we could do.
Before I get fired.
We could do. It's
inevitable.
Yeah, it's not that far off.
Yeah. So, but again, obesity and endocrinology, right? So the idea is to have some sort of, you know, obesity and cardiology. So
that's
having
awesome.
That, so that we can get to have an excuse to get together, I guess is my point, you know, like with our colleagues, because we always, you know, it's not like we're, you know, against each other or anything. It's just that we just don't. People have their meetings that they go to. And so, you know, having a way to collaborate intentionally, I think will promote more collaboration.
And I like think that. There's more desire for that these days than maybe used to be. The political stuff in this drives me insane, which is why I've actually pulled away from some of it. But in general, I think everyone does want to do more collaboration. And I think, and we did, you know, last year, that's why you were there with me.
The consensus
and
thing,
that's going to be a really cool thing. And we'll continue to do so. And as long as those of us who want to do that are remain involved to some degree, I think that, that's definitely the future, which is good for everybody, especially patients when we're all working together.
Yeah.
I love it. Cool. All right. So this past meeting, what were the big highlights? Anything cool?
Yeah, I think the big highlights, as we already mentioned, was, you know, looking at, first of all, we had Liz Paul, one of our patient advocates with the OAC, came and really gave a great opening discussion around stigma, you know, as you were talking about stigma and bias in the consensus statement. You know, she really gave us a nice overview of why it's important to keep patients first at the center of the work that we're doing, and the struggles that she's had over the course of her lifetime, which are very similar to, you know, what my co-founder talks about, you know, at KnownWell too. And so just recognizing that that's behind everything we do, I think really got, I had some great feedback from, you know, colleagues in the audience saying how great it was to sort of start off with that, you know, sort of passion around this is why we're here and why we're doing this and why we're talking about all these things. And then had a great, you know, Ted Kyle was there again, talking about bias and stigma and people first language. So a lot of focus on that, a lot of focus on, as we mentioned, sort of personalization of care and body composition and BMI, you know, Sylvia Gonson-Boley, you know, one of our board members at OMA, she's in practice in DC. She had a great talk about her approach to sort of personalizing care. She wrote a nice statement around BMI and racial and ethnic differences, you know, and how BMI is a hard, you know, there's a lot of criticism of BMI today. I think personally, it serves as a nice tool to screen people, you know, right? Like at the higher end, it's clearly not questionable as much as it is sort of in the middle or at the, at the lower ends, right? We're really talking about things. And so, but she had this great, I loved it. See, that's nice that someone like myself, who's been practicing obesity medicine for 15 years, you know, I still get little things right out of the conference, even though, little you know, pearls. You think, cause you know, like you can, a lot of us.
Or different perspectives too. You know,
yeah, just, different perspectives. Yeah.
That's absolutely.
You know, she talks about this, she has wrote a book, but she talks about this happy weight. You maybe should have her on. She's quite nice. She's quite,
yeah, we'd love to have her on.
Quite good. Good
speaker.
Write
that down, Spencer.
Yes.
I don't even remember what she said.
Sylvia Gonson-Boley, B-O-L-L.
Sylvia Gonson-Boley.
Okay. Maybe you can introduce us.
I can't.
Yes, we're going to ask you after.
So Sylvia is amazing. So Sylvia, and I'm probably, I really do need to sit down with her and be like, okay, pronounce your name exactly so I can memorize it. So she talks about happy weight and healthy weight. Right. And I think that's very important to distinguish, right, which is sort of like, you know, happy weight is more of a personal, you know, sort of decision. Right. And again, we shouldn't have our happiness be around our weight. That's what she definitely talks about. But the idea that, you know, we're going to come to some understanding about why you're doing this and what it's about and what that outcome is going to be. And then healthy weight, you know, is more related to sort of, you know, what is going to make your disease is better, right? So if you have fatty liver disease, we know from science that, you know, it takes greater than a 10 to 15% weight loss for that fatty liver disease to stay in remission, or diabetes takes about a 20% weight loss, you know, for that disease to stay in remission. So again, you know, the idea is to sort of address these two things a little bit, you know, separately, right? And level set them so that we can reach a common personalized patient goal, you know. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great. Very kind of cool. Sounds like Yoni Friedhoff's best weight.
Exactly. It's very similar. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I always liked that from way back when. I mean, he coined that, I remember, a long time ago. I feel like, you know, from the early days.
Cool. Anything else? What else? So body composition.
That could also lead into the statement too on the compounding, because you guys published that similar, you know, pretty close to the meeting, right?
Obesity pillars, right?
We talked about so that was a big, I should say, that was a big highlight of the meeting, was just discussing obesity pillars in our new journal and all the different clinical practice statements that have come out of it, right? And then also discussing at the meeting, you know, Kevin Hall was there as our keynote speaker, and he, you know, the real focus too was on this idea of just, again, getting back to the biology of weight management, right? And why it's so hard to lose weight and maintain that weight loss over time, you know, right? Because that's really another challenge, is that maintenance. And lots of talk too. You would have loved the protein lecture, I think.
Who did that one?
So I should have the schedule up in front of me.
I didn't know
this person before she spoke at the meeting. So it also brings up the point that there's so many. One thing I like about our meetings, different than other meetings, is people can put in, one of our things of our meetings is we have a call for proposals for our meeting. Okay. A lot of places just sort of pick people. You know, we were doing that recently for another meeting that we were planning, right? So like, you know, you pick who you want to speak, right? Versus in our case, we allow people to put forth proposals, and we get, I think, a lot more people on the stage, right? That you know, that you might not have met before or might not have seen before. And so again, had a great lecture, you know, around emphasis on protein and lots of, even, you know, Carolyn Francavilla gave a nice presentation on, she's one of our board members too, as you might know. And she gave a nice presentation on her experience with CrossFit, because she's a CrossFit level whatever instructor.
We should get Garth Davis to come talk about protein. He hates protein. He had wrote a book all about
you know what we should do? We should get Alan and Garth on at the same time. Anyways, that's anyway. That's all right.
Do you know Garth Davis? He's a bariatric surgeon. We've had him on the podcast, but he's a super vegan. He's actually a really.
I mean, we go back and forth on that, right? I mean, no one's ever gonna we still don't have that. Even after that talk, there's still not a good. I mean, it still is a questionable thing, out there, right? But I do think it had some nice. And then, like you said, so one of the big highlights for me too is that we wrote this paper on which also brought up our compounded semaglutide statement, but we brought up the fact that with our new highly effective AOMs, we had a panel on highly effective AOMs. And, again, what we're talking about there is our new medications that are now getting more like 15 to 20% weight loss, where our older medications, as you know, used to help people get more in the 5 to 10% range, right? And now that we're getting into these higher ranges, we really have to focus on that body composition and the protein piece, because we don't want to, just create a society where people stop eating and don't have enough energy to exercise.
Just wither away.
And become sarcopenic, right?
And some weightlifting. We just had our last podcast, I think that was this past week, was on that topic. We had a body composition expert go over because we had already discussed the whole Peter Attia raising the red flags about this, whatever. By the way, I have to respond to something else on that now. But we talked about it and how it's not really as much of a red flag as what he makes it. And so hopefully he's not scaring people away. But the concept that you're talking about is, yes, we still need to address it and pay attention, and people still need to lift weights and eat protein.
Well, because if we have these, what we've clearly said to some of the pharmaceutical companies, that are working in this space is you've got to help people because if we have more broader coverage for anti-obesity pharmacotherapy, as we are hoping for, as we try to fight for with insurance, and as we get more access, we don't have a shortage constantly. Hopefully, as people, start to make more product, we end up with more prescribing by people that might not be as comfortable with, as we are with counseling patients. And we start to have this world where people just, are not as healthful in their, because it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's a combination of that lifestyle and pharmacotherapy. It's not just one or the other.
Yeah. Great point. Well, so then, that brings up then, because for the past year, there have been these issues with compounding pharmacies and semaglutide, which is Ozempic or Wegovy, because we had shortages, but then the medical spas and the compounding pharmacies and the quackaroos, they took advantage of it. And in our opinion, took advantage of patients who were the vulnerable ones. And expose them to this for money, by the way, for profit. So tell us about, you guys, you are one of the authors, right?
Yeah.
I looked at it. And you guys published a consensus statement or at least some sort of professional statement on the compounding of semaglutide. I don't think that
compounding? Yeah. No, it was compounding peptides, right?
Peptides, so that's right. Yeah. Okay.
This is a different class of medication. I mean, in my mind, at least personally and professionally, there's nothing against compounding something that's generic, right? You can buy, generic bupropion and generic naltrexone. I mean, I can prescribe those separately as a clinician. A compounding pharmacy can buy those from a certified FDA approved manufacturer. Right.
Very key.
That manufactures those two compounds. And then they literally stick them together in one capsule. That's what compounding has all been about. It's been very important to compound for years. I don't know if you guys ever prescribed magic butt paste, but I feel like we should talk about magic butt paste.
For kids. My babies.
Definitely not prescribed that. I let the pediatric stuff go to Spencer once I was done with med school. I have seen no pediatric patients.
No, but the compounders used to make this great concoction of Maalox and I forget even what was Metamucil. It was like this amazing concoction that they put together.
And I know what you're talking about, because that's the stuff Spencer puts on his butt.
Exactly. But it was for diaper rash. So these kids would get horrible diaper rash sometimes. I have been impressed with the amount of diaper. When I was doing more basic pediatrics, I mean, there's some bad diaper rash out there. You look at this stuff, you're like, that poor baby's butt really hurt. Looks really bad.
Yeah, we've done that.
We would get this magic butt paste and the compound, someone had to make that, right? Someone had to put it together with these, known ingredients that are, and again, you're just sticking it on the outside of somebody's bottom, right?
Yeah.
So my point is that compounding has a place in medical care delivery, but compounding these newer peptides that are approaching on the market is not okay, because the source product, what many clinicians don't understand, because I had many people come up to me afterwards after mm-hmm. we did the panel, saying, I'm feeling pressured because like the people down the street, you know, my patients are coming in saying, I want this compounded thing. And because, mm-hmm. but the doctors down the street are giving it to them. And I feel like I need to do something, you know, and that's horrible to feel that way. Mm-hmm. You know, when first do no harm was the context of that statement that we wrote, because, you know, that's our oath, is to not do any harm. And taking a compounded peptide, they're not getting the source product from an FDA approved manufacturer. That source product that they're taking is we don't know where it's coming from.
Who knows where it's coming? That's what I've always said. Like, and where the heck are they getting this?
China. Well, I said, various different places. You know, I'll remain nameless. But the point is that, they're getting this stuff. And in some cases, right, these compounded products are powders that patients are being told to reconstitute. And we know that that's not how these peptides are delivered
in their bathtub.
Yeah. So it's like Breaking Bad, you know? So the thing is that, you know, we can't trust that stuff. This is the largest, what I said at the conference is, this is the largest uncontrolled, unconsented human experiment that we are doing in the country right now.
I've never seen anything like this.
That nobody is keeping track of what's happening even. Yeah, like certainly. There could be mercury or lead, or there could be plastic in there. And these are compounds that cross the blood-brain barrier. So mm-hmm. you're injecting something, and if it's actually going in there, that's not good.
These companies are making bank too, by the way.
They're, and but I
the
think
Facebook
I,
ads.
But isn't that isn't the hammer being laid down finally
it is.
Now?
Missouri, Louisiana, some of these
Mississippi,
other places.
Mississippi, I think. But I think it's going to be laid down even greater by as the shortage. You know, they can only do it because the drugs are in shortage too. So that will change it a little bit too. And then I think, you know, hopefully there'll be more restrictions by different agencies to control some of it, because it's not safe and it's not okay. And it just goes to show you that, you know, because of all the bias and stigma we've had around the disease treatment state, that people are really passionate about getting treatment, but they're trying to do it in a way that's not, like, they should be marching on Capitol Hill instead of like going out and buying compounded medicine. That's
people
not...
are desperate.
Well, and to be fair, physicians, nurses, anyone involved should have better ethics and whatever. I don't think they like. And I put the like med spas. Come on, and
But the other thing is, a lot of people. I was surprised by in our physician group that we have on social media. That's I was surprised by the number of clinicians that don't understand the pharmaceutical industry. The fact that they were saying, well, but it's semaglutide. I'm like, no, it's not the real stuff, because the real stuff is only made by one company they have to sell it to these people, and they're not selling it to these people. So like
some of the stuff that goes on in our little forum. So for anybody listening, we have this little forum on Facebook where we're all a bunch of obesity clinicians are in there.
Of some version of that.
It can get a little interesting in there. But Angela drops the hammer on them. And so do we. We do.
We try, although it's sometimes
then
hard.
It's futile.
But anyways. Points,
but that's why we made the statement. Because we really wanted to be able to come back, you know, like we were in this group and we'd keep sort of saying, but hey, people, like, it's not okay. And then now that we have like a consensus statement from a national organization, you know, not everybody, right? The state of Mississippi or whoever can use this statement and say, listen, this is a national association of obesity clinicians that are saying this is not okay. So,
so at least we can just reference it now. Which,
that was what
we
our
were
hope
just
was.
Talking. Yeah. You know, yeah. Awesome.
Very cool.
Well, good.
Well, do you want to talk about SURMOUNT 2?
Well, I think, I mean, 1 minute, just because it's in the news, right? So everyone's going to see the top line results. It was on NBC News last night. I think I watched it last night or the night before. I watched it on Lester Holt. You know, they act as though this is brand new, even though it's been, again, tirzepatide, approved as Mounjaro, has been approved for around a year now for type 2 diabetes. People with type 2 diabetes have really obesity that's complicated by type 2 diabetes. So those studies for type 2 diabetes were all published, you know, a lot of them in 2021. So it's been a couple of years now. The first big trial for those without type 2 diabetes, just obesity, was published a year ago, SURMOUNT-1. This was SURMOUNT-2, which again, is 2, was in people with obesity and type 2 diabetes. So they're making a big deal about it again, but actually the results are very consistent. Now, this has not been published in a peer-reviewed journal. My guess, I don't know exactly, but I suspect it's going to be published around the time probably presented at the ADA meeting in June. But basically, they went up to the 10 and the 15 milligram dose of Mounjaro and
tirzepatide.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was about a 13-point-something% weight loss in the 10 milligram group, 15.7% in the 15 milligram group, and about 3% in the placebo group. So just to compare that, one of the tirzepatide trials in type 2 diabetes before was compared to semaglutide. Now, semaglutide 1 milligram in that, and those people had obesity and type 2 diabetes, by the way. And they had about 6.5% weight loss with the semaglutide, 8.5% weight loss with a low dose of tirzepatide, 5 milligrams, and then 11 and 13% weight loss, respectively, with the 10 and the 15. You know, so it's very consistent. So to be honest, I think we all know that this has the best efficacy for weight loss per se. It has very good glycemic benefits in those with type 2 diabetes. So they didn't really talk about that because this was the primary outcome was weight for this, but we'll see all the details when it's published. And for everyone listening, the numbers aren't as big as those who don't have type 2 diabetes, because type 2 diabetes adds another layer of complexity to the biology of obesity, and it's just harder to lose weight. And in all the trials for everything we've ever had, there's less weight loss for those with type 2 diabetes.
Because I'm a little social media light. There's tons of people on TikTok and Instagram going, hey, but I thought you guys said it helps people lose 21% of their weight.
So that's,
and I'm like, yes, it does in those without type 2 diabetes on average. Now, this one is 15 point whatever. But to compare that, they did step 2 trial. And you have the data for that. It's step 2 at 2.4 milligrams for those without diabetes is around 15% total body weight loss.
For semaglutide, you're talking about.
But semaglutide step 2, it was 9.6%, I think, average.
Right.
So about 5% or so, it's around that same thing. So no matter what, tirzepatide is looking more powerful in all regards. So this isn't trying to trick people that, yes, in those without type 2 diabetes, you will get more weight loss. Actually, you know, it'd be interesting to have one of these physiologists on to go over the mechanism. One of the mechanisms is because if you have type 2 diabetes and you start losing weight and lowering your glycemia, you stop peeing out sugar.
Yeah,
that's one of the mechanisms.
Yeah.
So you stop losing calories out.
That's a good point.
Sympathetic nervous system is actually revved up in those with type 2 diabetes. Ew. So once you start improving that whole metabolic thing, actually you decrease that. So you're actually burning fewer. There's a lot of
little things.
It's kind of
like when your muscles become more efficient.
Yeah.
Like the
yeah.
more
yeah.
you,
All
and then you're
stuff.
Like, you know, like I'm on my Peloton and the instructor, Matt Wilpush, is going, good, you were building more mitochondria, so you could be more efficient. I'm like, I don't want to be more efficient.
No,
I want to be inefficient.
Yes.
So that's kind of the bottom line, you know, results for that. But once it's published, we can talk more about it and do some pros and contrasts and whatnot.
Yeah. Hey, Angel, thanks so much for coming on. Love the conversation, and we should probably just have you on more often.
Absolutely.
We'll support you and your new company.
You know, we have some exciting things going on this year at the OMA too. I'll just say it to wrap it up is that we're going to start a process by which we bring together all the stakeholders, payers, and clinicians, et cetera. We announced this at the meeting to talk about unifying the prior authorization process for medication.
Nice work.
So we're going to spearhead that and start to like work on that.
Another opportunity for collaboration with all the organizations that have anything to do
with
it. So,
happy.
Awesome.
That's
work.
The idea is Good to bring deal. Everybody together at a table and say, hey, you know, it comes out of, they did this with the PCSK9 inhibitors and cardiology and lipids. So I think, you know, having a unified sort of process and form, you know, that you ask the right question, you know, that everybody asks the same question so that we're not like guessing what questions they want us to ask. And then they deny it and say, well, you didn't answer this question. I'm like, well, you didn't ask. You know,
I should,
so
I, sh- I would love to be, you know, I'm kind of the representative for our, you know, the company Sequence or the program Sequence. I probably should talk to you a little bit more about being our little representative to, because this is just a, it's a pain area for everybody.
Yeah, it's pain for everybody. And the other big thing we announced is that we're going to launch a new campaign called Treat or Refer campaign. So the idea that it's going to be like a website where clinicians can go in particular to get more education on obesity. So free education on how they can treat obesity themselves. We're also going to partner with something called Project Echo. I don't know if you've heard of Project Echo, but it's a national, international, I think it might even be organization out of Mexico, out of New Mexico, University of New Mexico, I think. It's a federally funded / you know, research based Robert Wood Johnson, that kind of, you know, stuff. This Echo project is, the idea is to have these echoes, these meetings where clinicians come together with specialists. So you have a specialist leading the discussion. Clinicians bring in cases, right? Mm-hmm. They share cases, and then we talk about how we would treat those cases.
Very cool.
And this is a standardized sort of format that they have. So we're going to launch that too as part of this campaign to really sort of say that no longer is it okay just to ignore obesity, you know, just to say eat less, exercise more, but you know, you really need to treat it comprehensively, no matter, you know, who you are, refer it to somebody who can.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, and I'll see you in a week.
Yes.
Less than a week.
We look forward to it.
For anybody listening, if you enjoyed this podcast, give us a nice little review, share this with a friend that you thought or think would benefit from this. Thank you so much, Angela.
It's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.